Welcome to episode 407 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And we are back after a week away. Were you at Build? Is that why you weren't here?
You know, that would be awesome and unexpected, frankly. I've been at Build a couple of other times, but no, just on vacation across the country visiting family. And that makes podcasting difficult when you're not at home with all your gear and you're 3 hours behind your co-host in terms of timing. Yeah, that just wasn't going to work.
It totally does complicate things. However, lots of news out of Build, and we're going to talk about a lot of that in this episode. I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I have not had time to watch all of the keynotes because I, too, was traveling.
Yeah, because I was traveling during Build, well, for the first 2 days of Build. And so I got to watch some of day one, which was really interesting to me as a web developer. Not so interesting to pretty much anybody who doesn't care about web development. And then day two is all the consumer-y stuff, and I didn't get to see that one, but I think I'm pretty well read up on what happened there. Well enough that I think we can, both of us, pretty adequately share what happened with all of our listeners.
Yep.
But before we get to that, we've got some listener feedback. It's great as usual. We don't have nearly as much as last week, and that's okay. Not quite the flood that we had to deal with on episode 406. But some good stuff nonetheless. These all came into us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. The first one is from Sean, and his was rather lengthy, so I'm just going to cut this down a little bit, summarize it for you guys. He wanted to talk to you all about his experience with Sling TV, because he's had Sling TV since the very first days of it being available on the Xbox One. He was a beta tester of this stuff. So he's got a wealth of experience with it, far more than I have. And when he heard me talking about it, he's decided that he needed to go and see for himself if hockey looked as bad as I said that it did. And he's not a big hockey fan, so he hadn't really looked before. So he fired up the NBC Sports Channel and agreed, it's pretty soft. It's not the greatest. And he's watched hockey over the air before, so he's got the best possible thing to compare it to, and definitely agrees it's not the greatest, but it's okay if you know what you're doing. Because he's not a hockey fan, he said his test for video quality with hockey is, can he follow the puck? Now that can be kind of difficult if you're not somebody who watches hockey all the time.
Right.
And he said he could, as long as he was absolutely focused on it all the time. So there you go. He did want to share with everybody that there are settings that control the streaming quality, and there is an option called best quality, and obviously recommended using that. That is what I'm using, but it's still not the greatest quality. He then went and found that, I believe with the Roku app, it would actually show you the bit rate of the stream that you were watching if you pop up these settings while you're watching something. So he went through, like, this is dedication, guys. This is the level we expect out of the rest of you. So Sean went through and tested a bunch of channels to see, are they all using the same bit rate? Are they using different bit rates? How does this all shake out? So he started with NBC Sports, watching it live, 3.7 megabits per second, which is just kind of mediocre. You know, that's not fantastic. Then he switched to Fox Sports 1, 4.7 megabits per second, a full megabit faster. NBC On Demand, 5 megabits per second.
Nice.
Fox On Demand, 3.7. USA Live, 3.7. Here's an important one for you guys. This is really going to matter in a few weeks. Mr. Robot is on USA, okay? If you watch USA Live with Sling TV, 3.7 megabits per second. He switched to Mr. Robot On Demand, 5 megabits per second. So if you really want the best when Mr. Robot comes back this summer, watch it on demand. So he also wanted to recommend to everybody that he's gotten some pretty sweet deals as a beta user of Sling TV. So he was offered to beta test the DVR functionality that was released a couple months ago. I don't even really remember when it happened, but it hasn't been that long. And ever since then, he's been getting the DVR service for free. And that's $5 a month savings there. And then, you know, when they started, they only have what we call Sling Orange right now, which is $20 a month. And then when they started beta testing what would eventually become Sling Blue, which is the package that has NBC and Fox properties, that's $25 a month. That's what I'm paying. But because he was an early beta tester and stuff, they left him at the $20 a month price range. So some pretty nice deals if you're willing to beta test stuff for Sling TV. And Richard, I guess real quick, I might as well mention, I did use the DVR stuff more this week. And while it's frustrating that it still doesn't work on the Xbox or Windows, which, by the way, I tweeted at Sling to see if I could get any sort of timeline out of them. And unsurprisingly, they just said, it's something they're working on, but no no date to announce, of course. It does work fine on the Roku, and it works fine on my Android phone. And, you know, one key thing, well, there's really two key things with DVR stuff that we always like to know if it works. And with some of these streaming services, you don't really know what to expect out of DVR service. And that is, can you watch something like start it from the beginning while it's recording? And you can. You know, that's critical when you're trying to start a hockey game 30 minutes late and it's a 3-hour recording.
Right. Which, and then the other thing is, you can't do that with the DVR on Plex, right? That's not even an option.
Right. Yeah. With Plex, you can't start it until it's completely finished recording. That's right. And then the other thing is, while it's recording, can you fast forward and rewind, or can you fast forward and rewind at all? And I'm pleased to say that at least with NBC Sports, all of that is possible. But
good.
It may not be possible on some channels. I mean, that's the craziness of all of these licensing deals. So thank you, Sean, for all of that feedback and all of that homework that you did to investigate Sling's quality for us.
Yeah, impressive work. All right, well, we also heard from Joe. He says, hey guys, it is Joe, close friend of the show. I wonder if he intended to rhyme that. So I'm going to summarize what he said, because this is actually a really interesting point. He said that while he's been listening to the previous show, he heard a lot of suggestions about converting TiVo recordings and using KMTTG to do that. And he said he's been using KMTTG for quite a while with his TiVo, but his suggestion is just use that for extraction and decryption, but then use MCE Buddy to do the ad detection and the compression into the format that you want. That MCE Buddy is way faster and a lot more accurate in those steps. So good suggestion. Thank you very much. I keep on forgetting about MCE Buddy and all of its capabilities. Certainly with all of the different conversions it has, you can find something that can help you out there.
Yeah, and MCE Buddy's been around for years. It's rock solid. That I think that's a really great recommendation from Joe. Thank you very much, Joe. And then we got another follow-up from Henry. He had written in a couple weeks ago asking about an LG TV that he had purchased last year, and he hooked it up to his computer, and it wouldn't allow a refresh rate any higher than 60 hertz, but he didn't tell us what TV it was, and he didn't tell us what the video card was. So he wrote back and he said, it's an LG OLED 55-inch C6P. This is similar to the one you have, Richard, right? You have the B6P, is that right?
That's right, yes. This is the version, I believe, that includes 3D capabilities. Mine does not.
You're correct. It does indeed support active 3D. And then his video card, I'm a little jealous. He has an NVIDIA GTX 1070, so a pretty high-end video card there.
Right.
So I did a little bit of research. The very first thing I did was hop over to LG's site to look at the tech specs of this TV. Here's the weird thing. They've got a line item on that page for refresh rate. Nothing listed. There's just a dash in that line. No number. So there's no refresh rate. It's just you get one screen, period. That's it. I don't know why they don't tell you. Maybe it's because OLED is kind of weird when it comes to refresh rates. Because OLED can actually refresh its images way, way faster than regular LED TVs. I saw some conflicting numbers. I saw one article that said it can be 1,000 times faster than regular LEDs. I saw one that said 10,000 times. I think it's probably more like the 1,000, but what do I know? I'm not a scientist.
Still a lot.
So, which really confuses me on how all of that factors into what the refresh rate actually is. I wonder if this is more like the way plasmas were, where, you know, the plasma TVs before those went out of production would always just list 600 hertz, which wasn't even the refresh rate. It was just a different number, but it looked like a lot more than the LEDs that said 120 hertz. So I don't really have a great answer to this. But when I did try to do some searching, I did see other people reporting similar things with different TVs and different video cards. So unfortunately, I don't really have a great answer for Henry on that. I do question what exactly it is that he's trying to achieve, though, because if he's got a GTX 1070, that tells me he's a gamer. Like, you don't buy a $350, $400, it might be more than $400 video card if you're not a gamer, usually. And if you're trying to game at 4K resolution with this video card, you might be able to do it, but you're probably not going to be getting frame rates much over 60. Like, the likelihood of you playing a brand new game on high settings at 4K resolution at 120 frames per second to match the refresh rate of your screen, that's pretty unlikely. It's really unlikely. And if you're not matching that refresh rate, then you start getting screen tearing and lots of other issues. And so I'm wondering if this is really an issue anyway. It might not be. And then the other thing is, most 4K video content, like, I haven't even heard of any 4K video content that was higher than 60 frames per second. Like, I see 4K 60 advertised all the time for different things, but I've never heard of a 4K video source being higher than 60 frames per second. Because holy crap, is that a lot of data?
Yeah, that is a ton of data.
Right. So that's about all we've got for Henry. If any of our listeners have any suggestions on what he might be able to do to achieve what we think he might be trying to achieve, then let us know, and we will for sure pass it on to Henry.
All right, and one final follow-up, and I'm going to abbreviate this dramatically. My apologies to Rod. We've talked about Rod's situation where he has a vacation home. He wants to outfit it TiVo, and he just wanted to express that he was thankful for all of the feedback from the community. And he gave us a lot of more information that I'm not going to go into. But one thing that he said caught my attention that I think is worth suggesting here. He asks, why didn't anybody suggest Slingbox? He actually has one, and he could probably pull it out of storage and give it a try. And that's not a bad suggestion. I didn't suggest it because, frankly, I don't think they make them anymore, do they?
I didn't think they did. I mean, you might be able to find one on eBay, I suppose.
Or, like him and like me, if you have one, then sure, absolutely, give it a try.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great solution if you've got some old hardware like that. Yeah, cool. All right, well, again, all of those were sent in to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. If you'd love to send us some feedback or reply to any of the other messages that we got this week, we would love to get those in for next week's show. So, Richard, let's move on to the big news from the week. And as you mentioned earlier, it's Build, Microsoft's biggest developer conference of the year, happened last week in Seattle, the home of Microsoft. And, you know, the very first thing that I want to talk about here is the coverage of build. I get really, really annoyed by the tech media covering build and whining about how much coding there is during the keynotes.
I know. Don't you hate how at these developer conferences, right, they actually spend time showing development technology? Isn't that horrible?
Oh my gosh, people. Exactly. This is for developers. This isn't a hardware showcase. This isn't a, you know, check out all of, like, there's some of this stuff. Like, there is some, here are the features that are coming, but it's not all about that. And any features that they talk about that are coming to Windows, they're only talking about so that developers can utilize them in their apps. So they're right. going to say, here's an awesome new feature. Hey, let's use it real quick. And that makes total sense for the intended audience. So if you're part of the tech media, stop whining about programming being done on stage at a programming conference.
Well, right. And by the way, this is how Build and other Microsoft conferences that focus on development stuff have gone for how many years now? Have you never done this before?
Right. Build is for developers.
All right. So let's talk about stuff that's, well, not necessarily development oriented, because we're not a developer podcast.
Nope. I may be a developer, but I'm not here to talk to you about C Sharp. So I guess the first thing is they did talk about the next version of Windows and gave it a name and gave us a time frame for it, all in one statement, really, because the name is the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update. Oh. So if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, does that mean right now?
Oh, man. Oh, geez. When are they going to fire the people naming these things?
Yeah, it's not great. Like, I don't know why you would reuse the name Creators Update. Like, it wasn't good to begin with, so you used it again.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I think maybe they're reusing the name because the Creators Update that we got didn't have any of the creator stuff in it.
Now, see, maybe I was going to joke about that, and I thought you'd give me too much crap about it if I did. So I'm glad you said it.
Well, I guess it did have 3D paint, right? Maybe?
Something I'll use every day.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So there's the name. It's coming this fall. Fall for the Northern Hemisphere, spring for the Southern Hemisphere, I suppose. So let's talk about what we can expect. And guys, we had a hard time kind of figuring out exactly the order to talk about stuff here, because it's kind of all over the place. And we're trying to segment this in ways that you guys are used to hearing about it. So first off, let's talk about what this means for kind of the future direction of Windows, because Microsoft is very clearly realizing that Windows is great on the desktop. It's still used all over the place on the desktop, but Windows as a mobile operating system is basically dead. Like, they're not saying that, but it's basically dead. So how are they going to continue to be relevant in an environment where people are using desktop PCs even less because they've got such powerful devices and capable devices in their pockets? How do they make this all work and continue to have people use Microsoft products and specifically Windows? And kind of their answer here is to just work even harder on supporting Android and iOS, right?
Yep.
So what we see here, which, well, let's get into the features and then let's talk about whether we think that's a good thing or not. So basically two main features that they talked about here that would be coming in the Fall Creators Update. One is called Timeline, and it's basically if you're on your PC, we'll be able to click on the little task view window thingy, and it'll show you a pretty timeline of all of the things that you've been working on, whether it's, you know, Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, web pages that you've been viewing, you know, because Windows is for productivity. That's what they've been preaching for the last couple of years now. So it's It's the stuff you've been doing. It's the things that you've been working on. And then that's great on your desktop. But what if you go to another computer? Well, on another computer, you'll see the same thing. You know, so if you're at work and you shut down your work computer and you go home with your laptop and you fire up your laptop, if you click on that task view, that timeline of stuff that you worked on while you were at work on that work computer is all going to be there, and you can click on it and open it up there. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes with a technology they're calling Microsoft Graph to make all of the synchronization work, but the idea is cool. And then they extend, they're planning to extend that idea to iOS and Android through Cortana. And for a lot of these apps, it makes sense. You know, you've got Word and Excel on your iPhone and on your Android device. A lot of these apps are on phones and PCs, even if they're running completely different operating systems. And then to go along with that, a clipboard that basically does the same thing. So when you control C to copy text, or I would imagine even images and stuff like that, it's going to be available in the clipboard on your mobile devices, on your other PCs. This is similar to stuff that's being done in OS X. Like, this isn't the, or I guess it's Mac OS now. This isn't, I'm not saying that any of this stuff is revolutionary, but to get it all in the places where you're using your devices makes a ton of sense, regardless of the operating system that you're using.
Yep.
So, Richard, what do you think? Like, is this a good strategy, or are they flailing here? Are they just trying to desperately stay relevant? What do you think?
So some of it is definitely keeping up, and I don't blame them for that. I think these are good features to be adding. Now, the one thing that I wasn't clear about, but I thought I heard them say, was that this clipboard, I think they're calling it the universal clipboard, is also accessible across OSs through Cortana.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That is amazing.
Yeah, because when Apple is doing it, they're just doing it over Bluetooth across your devices, right?
Exactly.
So that idea of taking something from your work computer and then opening it up on your home computer, that wouldn't work because you're probably more than 30 feet away from your work computer if you're at home. So
right.
That's great. And then the idea of doing it across operating systems from your Windows PC to your iPhone or to your Android device. Yeah. Now, that's going to get some people, the tinfoil hat crowd, a little bit nervous, and they're going to be rushing to disable this, because what that means is that data is going across the internet. It has
right.
to.
Right.
Now,
it's up in the cloud using your Microsoft account.
Exactly. Now, it's Microsoft. It's not like they're rookies to securing data transfer. I'm not super concerned about them screwing this all up. But, you know, if you want to be really, really secure, then maybe you won't want to use this. Or maybe at the very least, you know, stop and think before you copy your credit card number to your clipboard. Like, you probably shouldn't copy your credit card number or your social security number. Or, you know, where that gets a little bit tricky, though, is password managers, though, right? Because you might be using a password manager to copy your password into different programs and stuff, right?
I would bet that the password will not, the things that are passwords will not be included in this universal copy. And, you know, similar to how you can't copy a password out of a password field,
mm-hmm.
I think they'll ensure that those types of things don't end up as a part of this, because I would argue that doesn't make sense. I mean, I could see a case where I might have one password on one device and I want to use that password on another device, but that does add, I think, some risk by doing that.
Yeah, definitely. So overall, I think what I hear you saying is it's overall a pretty good strategy, but maybe not revolutionary or ground shaking in any way.
Yeah, no, I think overall it is. Yeah, and there were some other things that they talked about too. The one thing that I want to kind of just, I don't know, temper people's excitement with is a reminder that we saw a lot of videos of features that might come to the Creators Update that we already saw, but those features didn't make it. And these features and others, many others, were almost all demonstrated in the same way through concept videos, not as live demonstrations off of PCs.
That's true.
So that's something that we just need to kind of keep in mind. That suggests that there's no there yet, right?
Right. All right, well, let's move on to something that is a little more fun and probably a little bit more solid in its potential release, and that is Microsoft's mixed reality headsets. And they demonstrated some headsets that we've seen before. They showed Acer's. They talked about a headset from HP coming, and they gave us prices, and they gave us release windows. So if you're a developer, then you can pre-order the Acer headset right now from the Microsoft store, and it's going to cost you $299. Back in the fall, I think it was, when they were talking about the coming Creators Update at the time, they said that mixed reality headsets would be coming and starting at $300, and they weren't lying. This Acer one is coming in at $299, the HP at $329. They don't look drastically different, but we don't actually know a lot of the tech specs, especially of the HP one. You know, the thing that's a little bit weird about both of these is this platform is called mixed reality, or it's supposed to be supporting mixed reality. And mixed means virtual reality and augmented reality. Virtual reality is typically, when you think of virtual reality, you're thinking about Oculus Rift or HTC Vive. And when you're thinking of augmented reality, you're thinking of the HoloLens or Pokemon Go on your phone. Things that you can see through, whereas virtual reality, you can't see through. It is all encompassing of your vision. You can't see anything but what is displayed on that. These aren't mixed. These are virtual reality headsets. But that whole mixed thing, I believe, is really in how Microsoft is planning to support all of this and make this all work together. Because I think they're also going to be trying to use external cameras that make it a little bit more mixed in certain scenarios where that makes sense. But right now, this stuff is looking like virtual reality, and that's not bad, but you got to know what you're getting yourself into here. So yeah, we know the price. We know when they're going to be available. There's other things that matter here. Like they said last fall that you're not going to need a crazy, $1,000 computer to use these things either. So the tech specs or the system requirements on these things are pretty low. Like we're talking i5 processor and the latest Intel integrated video, like integrated video and VR. And that's kind of crazy to me, because if you're using an HTC Vive, you better have a $1,000 computer with a super high-end graphics card. And these apparently don't require that. I would imagine if you want to play the latest, AAA VR game, it's going to require that. But for many of the things that Microsoft envisions that people would use these things for, you won't need a crazy high-powered computer. In fact, a mid to high-end laptop would be able to do some of this, which there are many laptops that you're going to be playing an Oculus Rift game on. So the other thing that kind of stands apart here from the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive, especially the Vive, is how they're handling tracking. With the Vive, for your computer to know where you are in 3D space, you have external devices that you have to place in your room hooked up to your computer, and they're scanning your position and the room. With these headsets, all of that stuff is just baked into the headset, which is great. That's way less to deal with when you're setting things up, which makes it more portable. And since it can be portable because it can be used by a laptop, that's all really, really good. And then, we said available this summer. If you pre-order now, to get the developer kit. And if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to pre-order this so I can get it, you know, this summer, maybe in a couple of months, and do all of this awesome stuff, you should calm yourself down a little bit, because
there's no content yet.
There's no content, right? It is the fall creators update. Don't buy one of these if you're not a developer yet. Wait and get one in the fall when there's actually stuff to do with them. There was another piece of hardware that they showed off, and that was new VR motion controllers. And these look really, really nice. We've seen motion controllers for the Vive and for the Oculus Rift. These might look better than both of those. They provide the full 6 degrees of freedom. They've got sensors built into the ends of the motion controllers so that they can tell where they are in 3D space. They've got triggers. They've got thumbsticks on each of them, and they've got touch pads on each of them. So there's going to be a ton of things the developers are going to be able to do with these motion controllers. And it's not available yet, but Microsoft did say that there will be a bundle of that Acer headset with the VR motion controllers for $400. So $100 for the two motion controllers, which I think is pretty much in line with what you'd pay to get the similar products for the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive.
So the motion controller thing is something that kind of baffles me. This is where the whole VR thing falls apart for me. I don't understand why Microsoft can't do something, and I know people are going to write, go ahead, do it. I don't understand why Microsoft can't do something with Kinect so that motion controllers aren't necessary. The fact that you have to have these things that you're holding, yes, to be able to control things, but also so that the system has an understanding of where your hands are and what you're doing with them, that drives me crazy. I don't understand why we can't use cameras for this.
I think you can. My bet would be two reasons that Microsoft didn't go that route. Reason number one being that people didn't really like the Kinect, and so a lot of people don't have them. Even if
fastest selling electronics device ever.
But the one that came with the Xbox One, people just complained about all the time.
You know why? Because they had to pay an extra $100 for it. That's why they complained about it.
That's a huge part of it for sure. But there also wasn't a lot for them to do with it. So that's the other part. The other thing is, right now, Microsoft is just talking about these headsets being used with Windows PCs. And while you and I have a Kinect on our Xbox Ones, and we know plenty of people that do you know anybody who has a Kinect hooked up to their computer?
No, I don't, actually. That's a really good point. But don't you think that this is going to have to go to the living room or family room at some point? Because I just don't see how this works in the environment in which most people have their PCs.
A lot of people, as these VR headsets have become more and more popular, I almost said more and more mainstream. They're not mainstream, not at the price tag that they're at right now. A lot of people have been just making the rooms where they have their gaming PCs more friendly for VR gaming.
Yeah.
Like that's a big effort, but a lot of people have been doing that. So. Yep. There was one other reason that I wanted to get to for not going with the Kinect, and that is, while I have the utmost confidence in the Kinect being capable of doing all of the tracking, if you're playing a game, there's probably more that you want to be controlling than just your hands. Like, there's probably stuff that you want to be doing where you're pushing buttons and stuff to, like, you know...
Agree.
I don't know. Anything.
Agreed. No, I totally agree with that. I mean, there is a need to have controllers to actually control stuff. I get that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So if you're going to have controllers anyway to control stuff, then you might as well use those for the motion tracking also. So I think that's why they went with that option. All right, let's take a quick break here to remind everybody that while most of you are just listening to this on your phones, on your commute, maybe you're exercising, maybe you're at work trying to forget about work, we do record this show live, and you can participate in the show while we record it live. There's a chat room. You can watch us on video. It's the only way to watch us on video is to watch us do this live, kind of. And as you're sending messages back and forth with us, we're sharing them with everybody. So it's a way for you to get in on the podcast, be a part of the podcast while we do it. And it's super easy. Head on over to our website. There's a live page for it, and join in. You're not sure when it is? It's normally Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's not always that time, though. So follow us on Twitter. It's at DigiMediaZone, and you'll know for sure when we're going to be live, because we always make sure to tweet about it ahead of time and as we're going live. And just a reminder, we're using Beam, one of Microsoft's newest acquisitions, and it works really, really well, guys. So come and check out the live show on Tuesday nights.
You know what else? It's much more fun than It's much more fun than watching the news. And I know because I do both.
That's true. Is it more fun than making really cool videos of, you know, whatever's going on in your life?
I don't know, but that was probably the most tortured transition we've had in a long time, Josh. What you're getting at, though, I'm sure, is the sneak preview, again, by video only, of Microsoft's new Story Remix app, which is essentially a next-generation Windows Movie Maker, which, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist anymore. So,
right.
Good that we have something new. So, this is essentially, think of if you have a Mac, or if you're familiar with Mac, Mac has iMovie, and what they did when people wanted to be able to create movies more easily was to put in this series of intelligence to be able to kind of jumpstart a movie for you and help you create a movie based on the stuff that you were throwing at it. And similarly, Microsoft Story Remix is able to take all of the media that you have been creating and assembling in your cloud account, that's critical, and use it to create suggestions for movies that you can then go and customize. And the other thing that's really cool about it is that it can integrate 3D objects that you may have created from Remix or Paint 3D. And the example, I love the example that they had where they just like have this person and, oh, and there's a dinosaur standing next to them. You know, they did some interesting stuff showing how they can combine the different media things that they're doing. And this is supposed to be part of Fall Creators Update. And like all the things that you spoke about earlier, Josh, here's the kicker. Not just Windows, Android and iOS too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really impressive. Like, when I first heard that there was some sort of Android and iOS integration, I was like, I'm sure that just means that the storage and uploading of photos and videos that you take from your phone. But no, it sounds like you're going to be able to work on making these videos on your iOS and Android devices. And that's pretty great, because this app looks awesome, Richard.
Yeah, it totally does. And not just that, oh yeah, and you know, it's also available for use on Android and iOS, but you're going to be able to pick up from where you left off, just like all these other things that they're talking about with this new Fall Creators Update. And we kind of hinted at that, but we didn't discuss that explicitly. Like the handoff feature in iOS, one of the other things that they're creating in the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update, rolls off the tongue, is this ability to pick up where you left off. And it's called something roughly like pick up where you left off. And that also works across platforms. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. This, I'm really, really excited to use this. Like, I didn't really care that much about Paint 3D or Remix 3D, but man, combined with this, I might actually start messing around with that stuff, because you could have a lot of fun. If you guys haven't seen this yet, we've got a link in the show notes to an article about this. They've got the actual Microsoft, you know, demo video of this. You need to go watch it, because while I don't entirely believe that you'd be able to do exactly what the kids did, you'd be able to do darn close. And it's really, really spectacular. And it's going to help fuel the creativity and the ability for everybody, but especially young people, to learn how to make awesome videos. And it's really cool. I really want to play with this thing.
So one of the things that the person who I think leads this effort spoke about on Windows Weekly was just the impact that this can have on education. To give kids the ability to actually, you know, create stuff, to explore creativity, to work with media, to do this sort of stuff. Like, this is already of interest to so many schools right now. And that, to me, that's awesome. I love hearing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it makes total sense. Like, my daughters, they're 4 and 9. One of the reasons I cut cable is because the only thing they watch is YouTube. And the vast majority of that stuff is user-created content. And my 9-year-old begs me all the time to start her own YouTube channel. And there's no way I'm letting my 9-year-old start her own YouTube channel.
Good idea.
I would absolutely let her mess around with a tool like this to create cool videos. She would have a blast with this, and she would learn a lot, and it would help her express her creativity in really cool ways. So
yep.
There's no feature that I'm looking forward to more in the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update than this specific video remix app. It's going to be great, I hope.
It should be great. Again, we've only seen it on video, so hopefully it will be real someday.
Yeah.
So that's it for video news. In audio, a couple things. First off, I think we've talked about this before on this show. I know I've mentioned it on Home On. Harman Kardon has kind of teased that they are going to be coming out with a speaker that is Cortana powered. And so think Google Home, Amazon Echo, but with Cortana inside instead of those other assistants. And think about this. Harman Kardon, what do they make? They make sound equipment. Really good sound equipment. So while those other devices might be, you know, nice little small speakers, I have a lot of hope for this. I think this could be a really cool device. It is going to be very similar. It even looks a little bit like the Echo. It's somewhat cylindrical, although in this case, it's a little bit, it's kind of more like an, I don't know, like it took a really tall glass and filled it with something and then turned it upside down. And that's kind of what it looks like. But this, I think, is promising. And they're not going to be the only ones. Now, you know, we said teased. Microsoft has confirmed that this is real. This was up on stage. This is a thing that's happening. HP and I believe Acer, I don't know if I have that right, but some other manufacturers are also going to be coming out with their own Cortana-powered devices. So what that tells me is that Microsoft is essentially outsourcing their Cortana devices. That maybe someday they'll come in and create a reference device, but they're not starting out that way like they did with some other platforms. And that's kind of interesting. I like that.
It is. So I'm excited about this, partly for the reason that you mentioned, that this is being made by a company that knows how to make audio equipment. So it's probably going to sound really good. And I do really like the capabilities of Cortana. I like that Cortana is on the Windows PCs that I use all day long. I've been trying to use it more on my Android phone also. But there's a couple of things that have me really, really concerned about this. The first one is it's still not out yet. It's not going to be out until this fall,
right,
which is what, like 2.5 years after the Echo? Or is it at least 1.5 years after the Echo? A full year later than Google Home. Like, it's really, really late. And they're going to have app development support. You know, one of the things they talked about at App Build this year was the Cortana Skills Kit. And it sounds like it's going to be way easier than writing skills and whatever the heck the the Amazon Echo platform. I'm specifically not saying the word so that we don't wake up anybody's devices. It sounds like it's going to be way easier to develop than Amazon's platform.
Right.
They even talked about, like, take your Amazon one, use this little thing, and convert it to work for Cortana. So there's going to be a lot of incentives for developers to do this. But they're so far behind that it makes me wonder if they will. The other big concern I have is Microsoft likes to think that they are Apple and they make these beautiful devices, and maybe this will be okay because Microsoft isn't making this one, but I could totally see this coming out with like a $230 price tag. And if you're going to walk into Best Buy and you're going to see a Google Home for $130, an Amazon Echo for $180, and a Cortana speaker for $230, and the Cortana thing is brand new and doesn't do anywhere near as much as the other two platforms, which one are you going to pick? It's not going to be the Cortana powered one.
Right. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It has to be under $200. It should be ideally less than that. Otherwise, it would be the most expensive of the currently known devices. But I would argue that this has to come in under $199.
I think if they want this to take off well, I don't think it can be more than $150. But I think that's going to be really difficult for them to achieve.
Yeah. Now, you know, I would argue, I believe I can qualify myself as the resident cynic this show.
Yeah.
This is Microsoft doing what Microsoft does, coming in late with a Me Too product, saying, oh, no, oh, wait, we had the technology to do this. Okay, all right, well, we'll do it too now. But they come in late, like phones, like tablets, like so many other things that they've done. The thing is, this space is hot right now. And I truly believe, even with the Echo and the Google Home and whatever Apple might be coming out with or might not be coming out with, that this space is going to grow significantly over the coming years. So I don't really feel like it's too late for them to make some ground. And you and I have said this many times. You know, Cortana kicks Siri's butt. It is a much, much better experience, much more reliable, much more knowledgeable. And I think if they can implement this right, they have a real contender against something that Apple might come out with, if Apple is only coming out with, as my friends Jason and Seth would want to call it, Siri in a can.
Right. Yeah, I'd much rather have Cortana in a can than Siri in a can.
Yep. All right. Well, speaking of Apple, iTunes.
Ugh.
Is one of two of the most used applications on what platform, Josh?
On Windows.
Yeah. How crazy is that? Like, according to Microsoft, iTunes and Chrome are the two most used applications on Windows today. And when they announced Windows 10S, only supporting Windows Store applications, everybody's like, oh, crap. That means I can't use it with my iPhone or my iPad or my iTunes library or anything like that, because it won't run iTunes. I won't be able to get iTunes. Well, actually, Microsoft announced that iTunes is going to be in the Windows Store. Now, it's probably going to be a Centennial app. So don't get all excited about them coming out with a UWP, because I don't see that happening.
There's no way that's happening.
But just the fact that they're doing this, the fact that Apple is, even if they're not doing it, even if they're just cooperating with Microsoft doing it, this is a big deal. This is an important thing. And it's a recognition that there are a lot of iOS users who have Windows computers. And why would you alienate them? Why would you say, nope, you're never going to be able to synchronize with iTunes again unless you do it through the cloud? You can't use iTunes anymore. That would be foolish. So this is a smart move for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, it totally makes sense. It absolutely makes sense. So, all right, let's move on to Richard's favorite part of the show, the gaming talk.
This has become known as the part of the show where I go get another beer.
Good timing. All right. So we actually have some fairly interesting news here. Because everyone got an update on their Xboxes like today. And there's some pretty cool stuff in here. So the first one is everybody now has arena support. And arena is the way to play in tournaments on your Xbox. And what this brings you is the ability to make your own tournaments. So it's only for Killer Instinct right now, but to get to it, you would go to the Killer Instinct game hub, go over to the tab for tournaments, and then you'll find other tournaments and have the ability to create your own. So like if you've got a club that you've made, you can go into your club and create a tournament for all of the people in your club. That's cool if you're a big Killer Instinct fan, and it will be coming to other games down the road. Another thing that they've changed is another enhancement to looking for game, LFG as we call it. Now, if you're following somebody and they create a looking for game request, you'll get a notification. I think this one's going to be a little bit divisive. I'm assuming you can turn this off because Microsoft has been pretty good about giving us settings for what notifications we can turn on and off at various times. But I think it will lead to people using this more. I never use it because I hardly ever think about it. But if I start seeing these notifications pop up that, you know, a friend of mine is looking to play Rainbow Six Siege, then I might change what I'm doing, pop in Rainbow Six Siege and go play with them because that would be fun. So I really like this new enhancement that's coming in. The one that I'm most excited about, though, is the party chat overlay. We talked about this a little bit before, but it's basically just a small window that will appear and show you who in your party is talking right now, which if you only ever party up with your close friends, you don't need this. But if you're playing in a party with people that you've never met, you're not going to know who's talking just by the sound of their voice. And this tells you. It's also completely customizable. You can pick where on the screen it's displayed. You can pick how transparent it should be. So this is going to be good. I will definitely be using this a lot as I like to play hockey with a lot of different random people. So that'll be cool. And then I believe it was the very last episode that we talked about the Dolby Atmos stuff, or maybe that was two episodes ago, coming to Windows 10. Well, that Dolby Atmos app that is on sale for $15 in the Windows Store is also coming to the Xbox One. So that means a couple of things. The first one is you can get that cool Dolby audio processing stuff in your gaming headset while you're playing. That's cool. But then the other thing is games are specifically going to start using Dolby Atmos audio eventually. And I'm betting you're still going to need this app to enable that support in the games, but they haven't said officially because it's not out yet. So that'll be coming very soon. And a lot of times when Microsoft updates these posts and says such and such is coming soon, it ends up being like 3 days later. So it might already be available. So if you're really curious about Dolby Atmos on your Xbox One, go check because it might already be there.
I'm going to be really disappointed if this is in fact a paid upgrade on the Xbox. I get why it's a paid upgrade on your PC because the licensing for Dolby is pretty significant. But we already have other Dolby licensing on the Xbox. And to exclude Dolby Atmos and make you pay for that separately would be, in my opinion, infuriating. Now, one thing that I will give you here, if you buy it on your PC, this is a Windows Store app, the Dolby Atmos upgrade. So in theory, if you bought it on your PC and you have to buy it on the Xbox, that upgrade should also apply to the Xbox in theory.
Boy, I sure hope so. Yeah, hopefully. All right. Well, there's also a pretty huge sale going on right now. There's always the weekly deals and the spotlight sale and all that stuff. And for the regular deals, there's a couple of cool options here. Final Fantasy 15 is on sale. It's $36 instead of $60. And there's another interesting one for all of you who do have a Kinect on your Xbox One. There's a game called Fru. It's spelled F-R-U. I think it's Fru. I'm not really sure how else you would say that. It's a Kinect game that actually looks really interesting. It's a like 2D puzzle platformer thing. And the way that it works is the Kinect will take the silhouette of your body and put it on the screen. And when the on-screen characters walk into your silhouette, it changes where they can move or how they can move. And you use that to solve puzzles of getting them across the screen in different ways. It looks pretty neat. And right now it's on sale for $7.50. So if you're looking for an interesting Kinect title, go and buy this. It's $7.50. Why not? And then there actually is one reason why not, maybe. And that's because Microsoft has also put over 200 backwards compatible Xbox 360 games on sale also. And we're not talking like 10% off here. A bunch of these games were 67% off, 75% off. We're like, I saw a whole bunch of games that were $2.50 each. $2.50 for a full game. That's pretty awesome. I didn't want to give you a giant list of recommendations, but there were a couple of standouts here. Red Dead Redemption. Everybody's really excited about this game because there's a sequel coming out and it was a great game to begin with. It's on sale. This was the most expensive game in the sale that I saw, but it's still on sale and it's $12. Another one, a lot of people really miss the skateboarding games, and Skate 3 is viewed as the best skateboarding game by a lot of people. It's also on sale. It's $5. I never played it, but I'm thinking of getting it because it does sound cool. Plus, it's compatible. It's got online mode. You can play with up to five other friends. It's got 6-player online co-op, which I'm guessing is just like skate around doing awesome tricks through the city and stuff. That sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds like Forza Horizon on a skateboard, and that sounds pretty cool to me. One other thing. $2.50, that's pretty cheap for a game. How about free? Microsoft announced last year that they were remaking Phantom Dust. It is an original Xbox game. I never played it because I didn't have an original Xbox game. But they said they were remaking it. We didn't really know when it was coming. Well, yesterday they announced it's coming tomorrow, which is today, and it's free. What? It's free. And it's Xbox Play Anywhere. So get it on your Xbox, get it on your Windows PC, and it's there. So I don't know much about the game because I never played it, but it's free. So just go get it and check it out, and maybe you'll like it, maybe you won't. It didn't cost you anything. Right?
Hey, speaking of free stuff, you know, we usually go over games with gold. I know that we covered what's coming up this month in the past, but there's one that I absolutely want to point out that becomes available the second half of May. It's only available for the second half of May for Xbox 360, and that is LEGO Star Wars The Complete Saga. Go yep. Get this.
That's a must get for sure. For sure. I busted out. I bought LEGO Harry Potter because my wife and my oldest daughter freaking love Harry Potter. And so I showed that to them last week. They've never played any of these LEGO games. Jen never plays video games. They loved it. They loved playing together. It was cool. These LEGO games are a lot of fun. So definitely get that one for free. In addition to that, on the Xbox One side, Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris is the other newly freely available game. But Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams Director's Cut is available all month long if you haven't picked that one up yet. And that's it for our gaming news, Richard.
All right. Well, we do have some other news before we talk about what's in our entertainment centers. Real quickly, though, before we do that, we just want to remind folks that you can find us pretty much anywhere. We're on iTunes. We're in the Google Play Store. We're on podcasts. We're on Stitcher Radio. We're on TuneIn. I'll tell you what. If you find a podcast place that has all the podcasts and we're not in that all the podcast list, let us know, because we're going to want to fix that. But in the meantime, make sure that you subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating or a review if you have time.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Richard, I didn't want to talk about this next story, but we kind of have to talk about it.
Yeah, we totally have to.
Just talking about this story makes me want to cry.
Oh, I knew you were going to go there. All right. All right. So, yes, in fact, everybody has been talking about the WannaCry attack. It is literally headline news. It is in front page news kind of around the world because it impacted many, many, many people. This is ransomware that attacked and targeted older versions of Windows, specifically Windows XP, but not just Windows XP. If you're running Windows 2000, 2003 server, Vista, or 7, that's right, this can impact 7, you need to make sure that A, you are up to date on all of your security patches. B, you are running Defender and you have some sort of good virus detection system on your computer. And C, if anybody, I don't care if it's your mother or your husband or your girlfriend or your dog or some random person from some country you've never heard of, if anybody sends you an email message that has a link or an attachment that you A, weren't expecting, I know I'm embedding letters within letters, so let's do, if you one, weren't expecting, or two, not and two, don't know exactly what it is, do not click it or open it. Period. All right, we're done.
We're not quite done. There's one little rant that I want to pass about. Okay. All of this. I'll make it quick. Some of the things that I've heard people saying about this is, how could Microsoft not support the XP users? How could they let this happen? This was an atrocity. How could they not support these people?
Yeah, it's listen, Microsoft's fault.
Yeah. A, Microsoft didn't make this. B, Microsoft gives 10 years of support for its operating systems. Way more backwards compatibility and support than pretty much any software vendor out there. And 10 years wasn't enough for XP. They extended it and extended it and extended it. It only recently stopped being supported, and none of that was news. Everyone who's at least in charge of these major networks and all that stuff that have been impacted by this, they all knew that XP was no longer going to be supported. It is not Microsoft's fault that people got hit with these ransomware, malware crap.
No, it's not. And for the large part, these are enterprises that have legacy software that cannot run on newer versions of Windows because the software itself is so old, it can only be supported by Windows XP. That is a different budgeting and IT problem that all of those organizations, in this case, many health organizations, health institutes, hospitals, emergency centers, they need to deal with that. That is just bad IT practice. While right. Everybody's bashing on Microsoft, it is worth noting they came out with a patch for this for Windows XP. Go get it.
Yeah. For an operating system they said they would not release anything else for, they still did it. All right. That sucked. Here's way cooler news. Windows 10 as a home hub, it's back in the news. And I kind of want this. The Verge has said they've seen documents and it's coming. Maybe with the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update. I want to see how many times we can say that this episode. Although they didn't say that. The idea here is a Windows 10 PC probably in your kitchen. So probably thinking like all-in-one sort of form factor type devices. Definitely touchscreen. Definitely microphones. Because the idea here is that you're going to use it a lot like those Echoes and Cortana-powered things. but it also has a screen so that you can see calendars and all that stuff. But it's also going to control Philips Hue and Nest and smart things and Insteon, yay, Insteon, and Wink and all of these smart devices. Sounds pretty good. I kind of want this, Richard.
Yeah, I do too. I think this is a smart move. We talked about this on Home On when James Montemagno was our guest several episodes ago. And the idea here is that Windows can be the basis for a home hub if it's packaged right. If instead of the Echo Show, which is this little kind of, frankly, like old industrial design, ugly screen that is going to sit on the counter and not actually be a useful PC. But what if, in fact, it were a more useful PC form factor and could run real Windows 10 and do all of that voice assistant stuff? That is kind of cool, potentially. And so it's all going to be in the implementation. It's all going to be in how real it is. But there's a lot more now suggesting that this is real. And I am not a naysayer of this. Surprisingly, this is something I'm looking forward to.
Cool. All right, that's it for our news. Let's get into what's going on in our entertainment centers.
Not as much as you might expect from me. I have been keeping up with the usual stuff to the extent that I can, and I can't entirely because, again, my Plex DVR data gone. Poof. Now, other people have been reporting this too. Friend of the show, John, got in touch with me the other day, said he had the same problem. He had to refresh, restart. Eventually got everything working again. What's causing this? We don't know. But a listener, and I apologize, I don't remember your name because I didn't write it down from when I got the message, but said that the solution to this, uninstall and reinstall, and it fixes the problem. So I will try that. Now, I don't mean, sorry, I don't.
But you haven't tried it yet.
Let me be clear about this. I don't mean uninstall and reinstall Plex. I mean, uninstall and reinstall the DVR tuner. That apparently is what fixes this.
Okay.
And that kind of makes some sense.
It does.
So that's what I'm going to try next. We'll see if it solves the problem or not. Meanwhile, I've just been catching the stuff that I miss on streaming services and surprisingly been able to keep up with everything. I am really not quite sure how, but I did start watching one new thing. Because everybody in the tech sphere is talking about it, and I never even heard of it. I should be ashamed. Gaiman's book, American Gods, has been turned into a series on, I don't even know what on. Is it FX? Is it? No, it's on Stars. It's on Stars. Oh. And there's so much chatter about it, I figured, all right, I need to try and see if this is cool or not. It is weird. It is graphic. It is not safe for the children. But it's interesting. I need to watch a couple more episodes. I think they're going to be 8 or 10. I don't remember which. I need to watch maybe one or two more. I'm too in to see if this is something I'm going to stick with. It is definitely not your average kind of show. It's kind of hard to keep track of what's going on, but each scene is like visually kind of like a visual piece of art. So I have to give them credit there. I never read this book, so I don't have the affinity for it that a lot of tech geeks do, but how about you, Josh? Did you read this?
Nope, never even heard of it.
Yeah, so if it's something that you read, I have heard that it is doing a fairly respectable job of honoring the book, and I think that might be, if I remember correctly, I think it's because Gaiman might be involved in the executive production of this. And then keeping up with the usual TV shows, but I also watched the movie Underworld Blood Wars, the latest installment, I think the fifth installment of the Underworld series. And I mean, I just like this because I can't even say she's a bad A. You know, I can't say it without us getting the explicit tag, but Kate Beckinsale as the bad A vampire in this is just friggin' awesome. I love that.
All right. Hey, you know, I need to ask you a question, asking for a friend. How is The Amazing Race going this year? Has it been good?
Oh, yeah, it has been. It has been. I'm getting really worried now because we're down to the point where most of the annoying people have been eliminated, and the people that are really deserving, and that it's going to be hard to, like, one of these teams deserves to win. Who is going to end up with it? It's going to be hard to start seeing people go now that we're down to the small group. But I've enjoyed it. Right. I've enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, I will let my friend, also known as my wife, know
that's what
Amazing
I
Race has been pretty good this year. So, all right, cool. I was going to do my videos and then my games, but I'm going to switch them up because Handsome Rob in our chat room passed along some information. See, this is why you guys need to be in the live show so you can be as useful as Handsome Rob. He was trying to partake in that wonderful backwards compatibility sale on a whole bunch of 360 games and found out that if you have money stored in your Microsoft account, you can't use that to buy 360 games through the website. The only way you can buy 360 games through the website is by using the credit card that you have on file. So if you don't want to use your credit card because you've got money on your account, you're going to have to bust out a 360. I do wonder if it would work from an Xbox One, because I believe you can buy 360 games through the Xbox One now, but I don't do it very often, so I don't know for sure. So there's a little bit of a tip for you guys if you're looking to snatch up a whole bunch of 360 games in this sale. All right, so sticking with my one gaming thing, although I have been playing, continuing to play Shyness a little bit and still absolutely loving that game, but I had to jump on a new bandwagon. I had kept hearing about this game, terrible, terrible title. It's called PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's really cool. I don't think I mentioned this last time. I don't think, because I haven't been playing it that long. It's a lot of fun. It's basically 100 people get airdropped onto a gigantic island with nothing. You have the clothes on your back. That is it. An empty island that it's an abandoned island. There's houses and stuff all over the place, military bases, and there's weapons and all that stuff and armor and vehicles. And the whole idea is it's basically the Hunger Games. The last man standing wins. And it is so intense.
Wow.
It's really, really intense. Yeah, it's like, I don't normally want to spend $30 on a game that's not done. This is an early access game. It is not done. It is not polished, but it is really, really cool. It's PC only right now, but it is coming to Xbox One later this year. So if this sounds interesting to you, go check out some videos of it. It's really, really cool. Check it out. All right. So I don't typically watch a lot of stuff, especially other than hockey during this time of year. But because I was traveling and because I was traveling by myself, I was able to watch three movies over the course of my two flights.
Oh, and wait, hold on a minute. In the last two weeks, something important happened as far as hockey's concerned for you.
Yeah, and sort of for you, because my team whooped your team.
My team.
Sent them packing for 19 years now, Richard. Your Washington Capitals have not made it past the second round of the playoffs. And for the second year in a row, it's my team, the Pittsburgh Penguins, who sent them packing for the season. That was actually tough for me because it went to Game 7, and Game 7 was happening while I was flying home.
Ugh.
So with no way for me to watch it on the plane. I got to watch the first two periods on my phone in the airport and then got on a plane for 4 hours and just had to wait to see who won when I landed at 1 a.m. It was crazy, yeah. But my team won, so I was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so movies. I watched Passengers with Jennifer Lawrence and what's his name?
Yeah, and this is funny. Pratt? Right. I thought that it was Chris Pine when we talked about this last time. And it wasn't. It was Chris Pratt. And coincidentally, like roughly around that time, I think partly to promote the movie, Chris Pine was on Saturday Night Live doing a spiel about he is not Chris Pratt, he is not Chris Hemsworth, he is not Chris Evans.
That's great. Yeah. So have you seen this yet?
I have not seen it. Like I think I mentioned previously, I want to see it, but I heard that it got bad reviews. I still want to see it at some point.
Yeah, don't like rush to put it at the top of your list. It's just okay.
Yeah, this was not one that I bought unseen.
Yeah. There's two major plot things that need to get ironed out. And the second one, when you get to the point of, oh, now they need to figure this particular issue out, that's when I had to get off the plane. And I looked at the scrub bar to see how much time I had left in the movie, because I'm thinking, this is a big deal. This must take a while. There was 30 minutes left in the movie. How is this going to get wrapped up in 30 minutes? Yeah, it's one of the many issues with this movie. It's not perfect, but the acting is good. And yeah, so it's enjoyable, but definitely don't rush out. And definitely don't make this one of those movies that you buy without watching, because this is a rental for sure. I also watched Ex Machina. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Yep.
It was better than Passengers.
I want to see this. I have not seen this yet.
It was not what I was expecting. Put this on your list above Passengers, maybe way above Passengers. But yeah.
This is on Amazon Prime Video, so you can watch this without having to pay for it. So it's worth a watch. From the reviews that I've read, I just haven't been able to get to it yet.
So I do want to say one thing about this movie. I don't think this is a spoiler. Don't let your kids watch. Don't let your kids watch this. Definitely don't let your kids watch this. Or anybody who doesn't like violence. And I don't think that's a spoiler, but there's violence in this movie that I didn't expect. So if you can't deal with violence, don't watch this movie either. So there. One movie, the last movie that I watched, is one that you should definitely watch with your children, especially if your children are girls, Hidden Figures. Oh my gosh, this movie was fantastic. This is the story. It's based on the true story of African-American women who were working as engineers and scientists and mathematicians for NASA in the early 60s. And at the time, they were working out of Virginia. You know, so they're still in the South, in the segregated South, and they're African American women working, like just working is kind of a big deal for that era and who they were, and working for NASA, helping to put people in space. It's such a great story. It's a real story. It's done really, really well. It's rated PG. There's no reason not to show this to your children. It's great. Cool. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I have not seen this yet either. This is one of the movies that I bought unseen because of all the raves that it got. And I believe, well, I know it was nominated for a bunch of academies. I believe it won a few, but I don't particularly remember. And added bonus, Hans Zimmer's name is on the soundtrack.
That doesn't surprise me. It was good. All right, so that's surprisingly light for you and surprisingly full for me, but that's it for what's going on in our entertainment center.
Yep. All right, well, real quickly before we are out of here, I am going to be on this weekend's episode of Popular Technology Radio again. It's been a while since I've done that. Talking about digital voice assistants, very much like what we were discussing in this episode. That airs on Saturday or Sunday in many local AM, FM stations, but you can also find that online and as a podcast, and we'll have a link to that when it comes out next week, because, it's probably easier to watch or to listen as a podcast, right?
Yeah, I mean, we love podcasts, so that makes total sense. All right, very cool, very cool. So let's get out of here. If you want to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways to do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDMZ. You can also listen to another great podcast other than this one and other than Popular Technology Radio. You can get even more Richard in your ear holes from his show, Home On. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
So I have an episode coming out that is, surprise, going to be all about light fare. Well, not all about, but we have a lot of lighting news and we have some interviews from light fare, including my hopefully, and I say hopefully because we've agreed that we're doing it together, but I haven't locked in the recording time yet. My guest co-host would be Avion's Dana Kunz. She's the chief operating officer of Avion, and she was one of the panelists that I spoke with at CES about lighting. So I'm really excited to get her on the show. I've wanted to talk with her more.
Cool. All right. And as we've mentioned, two or three or 100 times, we do the show live. Come and join us Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, or follow us on Twitter to know for sure when that show is going to happen. I'll be back next week. Richard, unfortunately, won't be. So fortunately, you've got all those other places to listen to Richard, too, for you to get your fix of him. But that's going to do it for episode 407. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And, well, I'll be back next time for episode 408. Until then, adios.
Bye.